perhaps, you know, the world's greatest sporting precinct right in the shadows of one of the world's greatest cities.
I used to love the roar of the crowd.
Magnificent mark taken by Roy Carter.
A fight kick is being made of time. He gets inside, well inside. In any weather you can see a spiky grin. Listening head and skin, you're not really behind the chair.
Oh, Cochin, just a little bit of genius.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And we did it the hard way this week.
We did. There was a narrative that was established before the game, apparently in the quarter time breaks, about winning ugly. And as you said to me offline, kicking 10 goals 18 is certainly ugly. But I'm going to challenge that narrative later in the show, Nick. But it certainly, until the last quarter, it wasn't much fun to watch.
No, it wasn't. You know, typical midwinter day at the MCG, feisty opponent, some comically bad goal kicking. Yeah, it wasn't much fun.
Yeah, and Nick, we should add at this point, ironically, since I've just listened to the official podcast where Tigerland Tone, the real one as opposed to the Twitter one, phoned in from a resort. You're phoning in from a resort in Malaysia, which will explain a return to the poor sound quality of before. So we apologise for that, but unfortunately it can't be helped.
I'd like to apologise to everyone for my mother-in-law's birthday that has prompted a significant birthday that's prompted us overseas. Thankfully, the internet here has been good enough to watch the game, but sadly, a bit down for podcasting. But look, I think it's a scrappy midwinter podcast this week.
Yeah, so just make sure the masseuse is giving you a back massage right now. Can't be picked up on the microphone when she asks whether sir would like a happy ending. Moving on. Okay, so the game itself. As you said, not the most spectacular contest. In defense it did get entertaining in the last quarter.
It did. Well, I was just going to say, I did get very excited when Cheddar kicked that goal in the last quarter from roving the centre bounce. And, you know, there were a few other moments as well.
Yeah. So it was the third week in a row we've had a slow start. It wasn't a desperately slow start, but we just seemed a bit flat-footed, particularly against a team that was coming off the bye, which is meant to be the team that's going to start slowly. And Nick, I was, and we debated this offline, I was a bit bemused we went in with three talls on a wet day, because I thought we established in our run late last year, we established a really good game plan where we'd play two talls on wet days and have a really strong press. The press is easier to do on wet days because the other team's not as clean, and sort of use the extra small to create small forward pressure. But we didn't go that way, and we were I thought, oh, when the game was starting, everyone was fumbling. Well, they probably regret doing that. Now, admittedly, as you pointed out to me, GWS did it as well, but, you know.
Well, GWS were even bigger, because they went in with three tall forwards and two ruckmen, both 6 foot eight plus.
Inexplicably used one as a sub, but, you know, let's face it. They can do what they want because they're playing for. They've got so many first round draft picks. They're playing for people.
That they were short down back, and I think that was part of what we thought about how we would win was getting Ty and Griff isolated. And look, we did have Jack on Matt Bunteen, who's sort of Jake Batchelor size. So you know, it was, and the weather forecast wasn't terrible and bounced down. There wasn't any more rain forecast, but it just was a sloppy. Oh, look, I was keeping an eye on it the whole time, and you know, it was pretty sloppy at the ground, but you know, I can see why.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a mistake, but you know, as you say, there's another case, and we were so dedicated to it. It's not like that they saw the first 10 minutes and changed their mind, because Griff got injured late in the second, and we kept him on for most of the third with looking pretty proper on his shoulder, which we now know has put him out for 2 to 3. But they didn't bring on McIntosh till late in the third, so they stuck to it. And to his credit, and we'll talk about him later, McIntosh really impacted when he came on. But yeah, so, I mean, I was sort of slightly bemused by the tactics, but, you know, it's all fine when you win. Now, the narrative before the game was let's win ugly. Now, I don't know about you. Aside, and as we said, kicking that badly is winning ugly. But I don't know about you, but I consider good teams winning ugly is when they play a 50-50 game and they put in a burst at the end and win the game. Just get over the line. But let's just be clear. In the last quarter, we won the contested possessions by 18. We had 12-2 inside 50s. We were plus 17 contested possessions in the fourth, plus 18 for the whole game, and 12-2 in the inside 50s. We didn't win ugly in the last quarter. We smashed them, and it was only... It was an avalanche.
So we had 12 inside 50s in the last quarter, 11 shots at goal, which is pretty one-way traffic. And, you know, normal circumstances, the game's over a lot sooner. Their scrappy kicks out of a pack and don't bounce through, which they seem to all day. You know, it was, you know, we had some bad luck, you know, but, you know, you've also got to recognise they certainly will be a pretty good team.
Yeah, look, they were going to fade. Actually, credit to one of the commentators called it that the GWS would fade because they run they're a young team running a high-pressure game style, and that's exhausting. So, you know, with the benefit of hindsight for the rest of us, and that one commentator, I think it was Jonathan Brown, who called it, that, you know, we were going to finish strongly, and we did, and we got just enough to get over the line. If you adjust for scoring accuracy, that expected shots graphic stat that Champion Data does, we win by 30 points. Now, that's slightly flattering because you get repeat shots when you kick points. So, you know, a 20-point win, we didn't beat what the odds makers thought was the line. I mean, it was great that we won. I still worry. The thing that worries me is we're still not beating... I mean, we dominated the inside 50s overall, and it is still our kryptonite that playing at the MCG, playing on a team that heavy floods in the back line, where we're dominating play, we still don't score enough. So that riddle is still to be unwrapped, and we'll probably see it again in the next few weeks. So we'll just have to see whether we learn to deal with it in the next few weeks.
I hesitate to bring it up because it's been a long-running problem, but... Cam Lambert, as the small forward, is almost Steve Morris-like in his levels of production.
Got six...
We still haven't solved it.
Haven't solved it, but he's playing his second game. First game was a write-off, but he gets on the outside, he breaks lines, he occasionally gets the odd... difficult crumb in circumstances.
He does get the odd pretty crumb, but it's eight quarters of football, 16 possessions, and no goals.
There is a chance he got six score involvements. That's twice as many as our 33-year-old former captain got, playing a very similar position. I'm not saying Cam Lambert's not getting the job done, but he's not. There is still promise there, and if we go back to Morris, it's just basically guaranteeing we'll have the problem for the rest of the year because Kane Lambert has shown more attacking ability in his two games, if only in flashes, than Morris did in the 10 or so game regular season games and the three practice games. The pattern of failure in his forward attempts was well established. But anyway, we are digressing on what is a fairly minor matter when we should be talking about some of the big games. And Nick, the person I wanted to start off, talking about was the obvious. Cotcham was the one who got all the coaches' votes. Fantastic game.
I was really interested by the coaches' votes, actually, but those coaches thought Chimp was the clear best on ground. And then they each gave votes to a completely different set of players after that. Like, there was no single player got votes from both coaches other than Chimp.
Maybe if Cotchin hadn't kicked that late goal, and as I pointed out on Twitter, I don't know if you noticed, Nick, but after he kicked that goal, which was a huge moment in the match, He thumped his chest.
I saw it on the replay. That was nice.
Not in that sort of wanky way that became a cliche last year where people grabbed their jumper, but he just, you know, tapped his chest just so the teammates saw it. So not that it became a big deal. It was just, it was quality leadership. Oh, and before I move on, and we were talking about the dominant fourth quarter, what did you think of Dimmer's Bake in the three-quarter time?
Look, having been on the end of a few bakes, I've wondered about how effective they are, but I think you've got to use them in the right time and place. And it's not something Dimmer does often, and they're probably more effective for limited use, but clearly it worked.
Well, I agree that, selective use is good. Who knows if it made any difference, but as a fan of the traditions of the game, I liked it for no other reason than it's a fine tradition of the game. You know, good team losing to an underdog, and you go out and give them a spray at three-quarter time and they come back. So, you know, I enjoyed the return to some of the fine traditions of the game. Cochran was very good. Return, kicked the two goals, one of which was sort of brought about by the other team being worried about him. Slightly lucky, but we got it. And the other goal was sort of 2012, classic Cochran.
Oh, just dragging the team on his back. It was fantastic. Bashahuli had a good game.
Yeah, 13 score involvements, which is...
Worked really hard.
Yep. Shedder, who obviously kicked the two absolutely crucial goals, including that brilliant running goal, was also had 24, which is high for him, and had 25 Precious Acts for a team high. So, like, not only did he contribute manfully and, well, basically got us over the line with kicking two goals that, you know, if you look at the picture, there's a picture of that mark he took from the second goal. He had serious hops to do that. Like, 9 out of 10 AFL players at his height don't get to that kick. And
of any height, he tested out top 10 in his draft year for vertical leap. And we don't see it all that much, but, you know, just now and then we do.
Yep, and 19 out of 20 midfielders don't kick that breakaway goal he kicked either.
That was pretty exciting. I was quite surprised. Dusty had 10 tackles. I was surprised to find that that wasn't a career high for him, but he did work really hard.
He did. He went at 50% efficiency, so it wasn't, and you could see that watching it live, that it wasn't his most attacking, it wasn't his most effective game as an attacker. Had he kicked that goal in the last, all would have been forgiven. As you point out, 10 tackles is good from Dusty and plenty of pressure acts too, so very impressive.
Well, I do think it's worth noting the opposition, because GWS are not like any other team in terms of their aggregate team athleticism. Like, they are the Silver Spoon team in terms of... GWS has had unprecedented draft concessions. Now, I sort of looked into it, and so we're a pretty normal team, maybe slightly above average in terms of number of our high draft picks who've made it. So we had 12 top 30 draft picks in our team on the weekend, and GWS had 20.
I feel a bit out of place that being the two who didn't.
So the Jake Batchelor, who, you know, relatively high draft pick, was picked lower than 20 of the GWS players. 16 of the GWS players were never available to Richmond at any draft spot. They were all drafted either with a pre-draft concession or so early before our pick. So, these are the chosen few of their generation. So their team athleticism is just much higher than what we're used to. So it's worth, you know, it was another scrappy game at the MCG, but there is a little bit of a mulligan there for just how athletic as a team they are.
Well, that actually gives me an excuse to transition back to another player I wanted to mention just quickly with Miles, who had a lot more uncontested positions this week. This week he had 14 contested possessions, team leading, co-game leading, and... of only 22 overall possessions, so much tougher inside game. And shows that, you know, he seems to work complementarily with in a complementary fashion with Cochin. You know, sometimes he plays more inside, depending on the matchup, or outside. So, nice game against his old club and got spat on for his trouble. Now, Nick,
classy guy, Toby Green.
Yeah. I actually thought it was an accident when I first saw it, but, I think he was trying to spit near him, but anyway, who are we to know what goes on in Toby Green's head?
Well, he's not a guy who's earned the benefit of the doubt.
Well said. Now, Nick, I thought it was very clever for pointing out the fact, for noticing and researching the fact that Grigg played one-on-one with Ward and had 23 versus 18. Callum Ward, who I think is one of GWS's best players, had 23 touches versus Callum Ward's 18. But pretty much everyone in the world's pointed it out by now, so unfortunately wasn't quite as clever as I hoped. But still, credit to Grigg. Well,
I think it's a three-part question of what did you think of Ivy's game, what did you think of his report, and what did you think about Tom Downey?
Okay, so the first part of Ivy's game, his possessions around the ground is down. I think he hasn't had a good month, hasn't had a good last four or five games. Two of those games were against extremely good ruckmen. The last two weeks have been against ruckmen he should have bossed. He did have 10 hitouts to advantage of a 41 overall. Fairly good game from a pure ruck perspective, but that's not Ivy's go. Ivy had 7 round the ground. That's probably not enough. Which leads me to my second point that, like, the trend is going down. He's form 1 this year, so having a week or two off is not necessarily a bad thing. So I'm not upset that he got rubbed out. As for his elbow, it was...
I had a couple of reactions to it. It was a really sloppy attempt at third man up. Like, you know, for about a 6-foot midfielder to just run in from the side against two 200-centimetre guys, I think Ibi's initial reaction of just lifting his arm to sort of try and protect himself was okay. It was sort of he left it hanging there and clotheslined him. And it did really make me think that if the AFL ever wanted to hold a Royal Rumble, Ivy would be my choice.
Indeed. I must say, Steele has earned my respect for getting up and not making it look worse than it was. Because that did, you could see on the last replay of it, that would have hurt. It did collect
hit. That would have hurt, yeah. He was tough kid. Apparently we liked him in the draft, but yet again, another draft concession for GWS.
Yeah,
Tom Downey, actually also another kid we liked at the draft, didn't pick him, ex-junior Australian basketballer. He's played 2 games in 4 years, I think. Big lump of a lad. You know, we're always on the lookout for post-Ivy candidates. What did you think?
It was all right. I mean, he had 5 hitouts to advantage. Nothing he did spectacularly stood out to me. Is there something I should have noticed?
No, I just wondered. I liked Lob better, but sadly he's signed through 2018. But you know, just worth keeping an eye on. I thought he was okay, and I thought he competed reasonably well. I wouldn't want him to draft him as the number one replacement for Ivy, but I could live with him being at the club.
Okay, fair enough. And that's quite a long conversation for ruckwork, even by my standards. We should note, Jack is in magical form. I'll come to this later.
Definitely.
We're going to have a conversation about this, but on the slightly hard-to-decipher AFL rankings, Jack has absolutely shot up the list this year, having a fantastic season. Nick, there's a couple of other guys quickly I wanted to talk about. Batch, this has been pointed out as well, absolutely bullied McCarthy. Like, it's been pointed out McCarthy was kept...
He's had a pretty decent season.
He has. I mean, McCarthy's a good player. Batch was beating him up off the ball too, was really trying to physically dominate him. And that attack on the ball when Smith was coming the other way late in the fourth was that... I mean, that kind of stuff, that's proper grown-up teams... who can do something. You know, those little moments, teams that are going to finish 10th don't do that.
I'm happy with how his season's going. I'm a little bit concerned about Taylor Hunt, I must say. I know he he's fitted in pretty well to our back nine, but the curve's pointing downwards a bit for him, unfortunately.
And Matt Deeplay still keeps playing well in the twos. There comes a point where you have to pick Matt D, or someone has to ask the question, why did you bother keeping him on the list?
I do think that Matt D is seen as a backup for Grimes and Batchelor more so than being able to play on the really small guys, but that seems to be how he's picked. He's been in an emergency for a couple of weeks in a row, but I do think that
He's probably not going to get picked for Hunt because he played the full game on Sunday, and the people who are likely to come in got rested. So someone I wanted to, and by the way, I wouldn't know because D never seems to play one, so I never get a chance to have a good look at him. And he's playing against crap in the VFL, so it's hard to know how good he is. One person who really impressed me when he came on straight away. McIntosh was finding space, getting kicks. I think his second touch in the third, he had a bounce and set up the shot that Ty had that he inexplicably missed. But eventually that chain of passage led to a goal. But I thought he was great as a sub and probably should start next week.
I think so. I can see the need to nurse him through the season a bit because he's never had a full season of AFL before. I think he'd be up to the most games he's ever played in a season already at senior level. So he's probably feeling the pinch to an extent. He is a good sub. I like him. I like his size and athleticism off the bench. But, yeah, I think he's earned a starting spot this week.
You mean senior level counting VFL games as well?
Yeah, counting. Yeah, he's had two injury-interrupted seasons in the VFL. So
as an adult, yep, makes sense. There was one moment late in the fourth quarter where Jeremy Cameron tries to tackle him, and he gets a big elbow from McIntosh, and Jeremy Cameron stayed down. So hats off to McIntosh. There's a bit of muscle to that body. Gordon, I thought, was pretty good. Didn't dominate the score assist, but has been put
well. First half in particular, he did. Now that I've noticed him running underneath the ball, so he's not useful as a marking option, I can't stop noticing it. But he did. I think he was over. He was in double digit possessions in the first half, and was good. I'm quite happy. While he's in decent form, I'm happy for him to be in the team.
That's really all the individual things I wanted to point out. Is there anything else any individual effort you wanted to? Oh, I can't believe it! I didn't mention it. The person who I wrote the most notes about was, of course, Ty. Just to remind us all that he will forever frustrate us, is in the first half he was took the bad Ty return, managed to lose a one-on-one contest with Heath Shaw. A few people, and he doesn't leave his feet enough, which gets really frustrating. But, and he butchered a few shots on goal, as discussed, and twice he got on the break really well, once as ruck and once in a general field, and he butchered the open field kick, which is one of his strengths. At one stage, he kicked Lambert when he was 2-on-1, and he dropped that ball on his head, thanks, Ty.
Shortest guy on the team.
Yeah. But on the other hand, he kicked that big goal late, and he was actually ruck quite well late.
I noticed that as well. I mean, we have already talked about ruck work a lot, but actually the last 2 weeks he's rucked a bit, and he's been okay, which is going to be good with both Griffiths and Marich being out.
And he did have a couple of contests as well where he drew them in. You know, he did the tall's job of bringing the ball to the ground. So, wasn't irredeemable. I'm slightly disappointed Hammer's likely to play this week because I almost wanted to see Ty put his big boy pants on and play a full game in the ruck against a credible but beatable opponent in Wood.
They've got Cruiser as well, don't they?
Yeah, they do. He's back.
They're playing okay. So,
Is there anything else? Anything else from the game?
Oh no! Look, just to note that there's media speculation this morning about GWS. I mean, it's so I certainly won't go into the full details of the amount of research I do on GWS, noting their bounty of draft talent and that they seem to lose a few of them each year. But suffice to say, I'm happy with the
Trelawler rumours. Yeah. So, Nick, you've just dropped out quietly, so I'll keep talking while you get round to it. Yeah, so there was a rumour in the paper that Trelaw, that us, North Melbourne and Collingwood, are all chasing Trelaw. You know, and you got to take these things with an appropriate grain of salt because it's really hard. Mid-season trade rumours very rarely come true. I think Rance has been traded off to about 10 teams. But there is... there is probably a grain of truth to it, and Nick, you've sort of been watching Trelaw a bit, and what's your sort of your observations?
So, I was very excited about Scheel. Scheel, for me, is the closest thing to a young Chris Judd we've seen in a while, but there's a chance that Trelaw is Simon Black, and you know, he's 27 disposals a game, 4 to 5 tackles, 1.5 shots of goal. There's a lot to like there. He's 22. I'm okay with the big contract offer because it is really hard to get gun players from other clubs.
It is, and it will be hard to get him, but yeah, I agree. He's an accumulator. I'm not sure exactly how in some ways he might be a rich man's Miles, but we'll just wait and see. It's certainly an exciting rumor, and it'd be a shift in strategy for us to go after. We haven't had a big trade in a few years now, which is completely understandable after the pick 19 that shall not be named. But you know, this to go after Trelaw would be a big fish, would be a big investment in salary cap, and it'd certainly make the off season interesting. But Nick, that's a nice segue for me. We'll talk about the VFL in a tick, but I wanted to ask you a question. This week, as we know, Jack re-signed. Exciting, as I think you...
Very exciting.
How did you... Do you want to repeat the thing you said about you hadn't even started to worry about it?
Well, I put it out on Twitter. My favourite type of re-signing is the one where I haven't even worried about them coming up to be re-signed, and they've already re-signed. It's great.
Yeah.
Jack's missed one game in 5 years. He's kicks goals, inside 50 pressures... goal assists. You know, he's not the best full forward in the league. He's just really good.
He is.
And he's ours.
He is. And I wanted to ask you a question about that. But, you know, it was great. And I wondered whether the reason that we resigned him at this time was because we had a bit of spare cap room because we kept it for the potential of a big fish last year. And when we didn't get... one of either Hanbury or Armitage, that we had a bit of spare cap, and now we're using it to front load some new contracts. Who knows? Wild speculation. But Nick, in the absence of the AFL, who want to be treated like a grown-up sport, but actually doing a grown-up sport thing like releasing contract values, which would allow us to properly analyse whether or not a deal is a good deal or not, since we're sort of just guessing about what all our best players are paid, our best five players are clearly... by most people's standard, most people would judge over the last few years, our best five players are Jack, Rance, and the three mids, Lids, Chimp, and Martin. And four of those five have been all Australians, and Martin's the only one that hasn't, but he's clearly in that group of five. Now, if they're all the same age, if they're all 25, and four of the five are very close to the 25 years old, and you were building a new club, and you could have any one of them at the same salary, so the age and the salary are the same, which one do you think is the most valuable?
That's a really good question. I would extremely reluctantly have to put Jack fifth, unfortunately, because I just think having suffered through years and years of having good key forwards, but mediocre teams with Richo, who, you know, was a once-in-a-generation talent, but, you know, if the ball's not getting down there, you can't win. So I was sort of Jack fifth. For me, sort of Lids, I'm very reluctantly putting Lids fourth. Though that might be bias with the recent injury problems. You know, Dusty still has that potential, but he could get even better. And it almost feels like Dusty's perhaps won, not been as consistent, but has perhaps won more games in the last few years.
Yep.
So
that's a good way to put it.
Sort of for me, it came down to thinking about Rance and Chimp. And Rance is the best player at his position in the AFL. But again, I sort of have to come back to the midfielders and winning premierships out of the midfield. And yeah, it's Chimp by a hair for me.
Well, it's good analysis. And, you know, the reason I asked the question is because there's not an obvious answer. In contemplating, I have at one stage had all five players on top of my list. Now, the one thing I'm going to cop out a bit here and say, had it been the 2012 Trent Cotchin, there'd be no doubt he'd be number one.
Oh, absolutely.
But when I did a bit of thinking about this, the sneaky thing is that, okay, so we've discussed them many times, the 2012 Trent Cotchin is gone, the 2013 and 14 was just a notch below. The 2015 Trent Cotchin is splitting the gap a little bit. He's splitting goals. He's got the career highest. His contested possession average is at a career high 13 contested possessions a game. He's sort of back in the top 10 in a lot of the key. He's sort of dropped out into the around sort of 15 to 20 in a lot of the key indicators. But now he's back inside the top 20 for the, you know, things like total contested possessions and other things. So Trent Cotchin is just kicking.
No, he's top 10 in the AFL Coaches Association as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's a long way from. I mean, he won it once, and the 10th in that list is a long way from the top two.
I mean, Fife is miles in front. But yeah,
the point is, he has kicked up. He is having a slightly better season than he's having his second best ever season, which is a pretty good thing you want to do after you've just signed a 5-year contract. So, actually, according to the AFL player rankings, Richmond's best player for a long time, for the last sort of 12 months, has been Shane Edwards, which I don't think his form has been at a level for so long that you could consider him in the top five. But I just make that point. Right now.
Well, the AFL player rate, we discussed it off air, that Rhys Palmer, in his 3 goals, 8 possessions and 1 tackle, was rated ahead of Chimp with his 33 disposals, 2 goals, 2, and 5 tackles. There's something not quite right there.
Yeah, he did go at 61%.
It was Chimp, a 61% day.
But that's not terrible. And according to the player rankings right now, Jack is our best player. You know, there's a case to be made by position scarcity. Jack in his current form is our best player. But again, I think you've got to go over the last 3 years and not just, you know, the scintillating last 2 weeks, particularly.
We do look terrible when Rance isn't in the team, just having his ability to break off a contest and kill a ball 30 metres away is fantastic. I thought long and hard about him at number one.
Yeah, and as you say, we discussed last week, he is our best player. The case for Lids is he plays every position well, he's just spectacularly productive and does difficult things well. The case for Martin, as you said, he wins games, and a lot of the time I was thinking because he leads us in score involvements, he might be our best player. Because it's easier to get mids who'll get you clearances.
And he's so damn exciting. Right, yeah. He's our most exciting player, even more so than Jack, and Jack's great.
Yeah, so, I mean, I actually had Dusty at number one for at least 30% of my consideration. I'm happy to go with your list of prioritisation. I, at one stage, there are times I could have even been convinced. This is how it is. Like, I'm happy to go with your list, and I could have also put Trent Cotchin fifth. Like, that is how close it is. Anyway, that's a hypothetical ESPN-style hot take for you, but it's just interesting. We are a team.
Bit of fun.
And I know you don't rate them, but there is a point, if you look at the AFL player ratings, we don't have a player in the top 35, but we have 7 players in the top 100, which is sort of about what you'd expect. But we're sort of a team that's not defined by one single Pendlebury or a Dangerfield or a Fife, or an Ablett, but we're defined by a sort of a top five of players. Anyway, fair felling.
Well, it was, you know, reasonably scrappy affair against a pretty scrappy opponent in North Ballarat, both teams right down the bottom. My boy, I think you've got to start there. People should go and have a look at the highlights. He'd been rucked a bit, but also managed to get forward for 4 goals, which I really liked. Ben Lennon, probably his best game for the year, 25 disposals on a wing, also pretty nice. Matthew Arnott getting good reviews for his reincarnation as a small defender, but not winning all that much football. But Matt Thomas winning a ton of ball.
Yeah, you know, I like playing differently on wet days. I'm not sure Dimmer does, but I do. And I'd be, I know this is weird, but I'd be totally fine if Dimmer brought in Thomas as a sub on a wet day, because he is actually decent as a sub. He's decent on wet days. It suits his style of game plan. You know, just a left field thought. The Stevie Morris, 13 possession, 6th contested, was praised for his defensive work. Gave away 5 free kicks. Didn't see that on the official wrap. Matt Madonna only played a half of footy. So Matt Madonna, Chris Knights played a half. I think injury. Matt Madonna only played a half, I presume, because he's a chance to play next week. It'd be fantastic if he got a
game. He was one of the emergencies. Well,
and as did Sam Lloyd.
So, well, again, wet weather guy. Chris Knights. You know, he's the great white whale of the team, but he did have another one of those moments in the first half where, you know, he got the ball at centre half forward, wheeled around and nailed McBean on the lead with a beautiful pass. So, yeah, if we could ever get him fit, if.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, as far as I could tell, I think Newey played forward for probably at least 3.5 quarters. He did finish the game back. I mean, Chris just comes in and as a natural forward gives us a lot more potentially in that role. But I will say with Chris, we keep saying the if. I'm just impressed he still has the guts to keep doing rehab, because it's so hard mentally.
Rehab is so boring. Oh, my God.
Yeah, and you just, like, I mean, the doubts it must go through his head about Kenny's
body. Out of contract at the end of the year, you know, can do it again. But good luck to him.
Yeah, absolutely. Jaden Short, unfortunately, is out for the year. With an ankle injury, which is a bit disappointing because I know you're a fan, Nick.
Yeah, look, I think he was always a bit of a development prospect physically, but yeah, that is a bit of a shame. I really like our draft class, but they've been banged around with injury.
Yeah, and another one of your favourites, Dave Asprey, came back and played respectably, made the best. All right, Carlton, Nick. I don't
Carlton.
Know, I'm struggling to hate this version of Carlton as much as the previous Carlton's.
Well,
straight.
Well, yeah, I mean, you should hate them because they are Carlton. And, you know, that they're even a sort of a semi-respectable team in the last month. I mean, there's a fair element of dead cat bounce about it. But, you know, well, they're actually they're not a young team. You know, Patrick Cripps aside. And, you know, they've got some respectable players like Andrew Walker, Carrazzo coming back in, you know, Yaron, Cruz's a good player, Gibbs, Murphy. You know, there's the core of a decent team there. They can certainly run us close, and, you know, if things go their way, you know, they could win. Like, and they'd be really smug about it when they have absolutely no reason to. Like, they're, you know, their long-term future is still woeful. But, you know, we should win, but they're going to be a tough out.
Yeah, and it's obviously a temptation when you had a bad season. You want to beat your traditional rivals in front of reasonable side crowds, which Friday night will probably be, depending on the weather.
Well, and they've got an interim coach, and they've shown a few signs of life, and maybe he can do a Gisham and get the job long term. Like, they certainly haven't gone full rebuild. Like, there's hardly any skinny kids running around in the team.
What worries me slightly about them is they... I didn't see the Western Bulldogs game, but they have, since they sacked Malthouse, often gone with a very run-and-gun style. They've sort of been freed up and a lot of playing on, and they have beaten us playing that unaccountable style in the past. So, I mean, there was a very low-scoring game against the Western Bulldogs, but it worries me because in the past they're sort of... Their ability to run ahead of the football has sort of been our Achilles heel, and Malthouse seemed to coach that out of them. But you know, it potentially is back.
I know. Yeah, look, and despite having Cameron Wood, their ruck stats are okay. You know, their midfielders, some big names still in the midfield. You know, they've played some decent footy recently. So, you know, this game really does worry me. We are still 20-point favourites, even with Ivy out. But yeah, I'm worried. How would you go about, you know, Griffiths and Ivy out of the team? How would you replace them?
It was interesting, actually. Well, I sort of backed off slightly on my disapproval of the going into the three tall forwards against GWS, because you realise if we continue with a 3-4 tall forward strategy, McBean gets a game on the weekend, but if we drop it, McBean probably doesn't get picked. Hammer plays for Marich, and if you keep three talls, you bring in McBean for Griffiths. And there is one case for doing that, Nick, is that Hammer's not that reliable with his knee. He may get injured, and maybe you want a rock chop out for Ty if he has to go first ruck. Having McBean there, I know you don't want him getting beaten up, but he could probably take sort of 10 contests late in the game and not get killed. So,
well, I do feel a bit better about it, that he has been rucking a bit in the AFL the last month, but Carlton Ruckman are pretty big boys.
May I read out to you the text you sent to me when I said maybe McBean could play third ruck? You said, no, I don't want my McBean getting injured.
I'm very protective. I'm worried about it being wet as well. I can see a case for bringing in a smaller guy like Madonna.
Or the legend of Sammy Lloyd, who kicked three goals on a wet day against Collingwood on W.
Yeah, I can see the attraction of Sammy, particularly if it's a really wet night. Oh, I just want to win. You say you don't mind this version of Carlton. You know, I bet when you see them running out, see their fans, what's left of them in the stands, I reckon you'll hate them still.
Oh, absolutely. If the game is if the game is close, the hatred will come up even higher.
We haven't mentioned at all what the AFL did with Philip Walsh's death over the weekend, which, you know, we're often critical of the AFL and particularly how they've handled expansion. This was one thing they got really right, and it was genuinely moving when the press reports of at the end of their game, when they got the players in the circle, Jack actually spoke to the circle of players, telling them that they should go home and tell their families that they love them. Is that kind of guy?
You could also, you could hear, it was quite moving on the replay, you could hear the birds. It was so quiet at the G, you could hear the birds calling. It was almost eerie. And Nick, there was a really good interview with Bomber Thompson, and we'll go out on this, and he was talking about, I really like Bomber Thompson these days. He's slightly crazy, but very insightful. He was interviewing Morris, and aside from pre-game on Saturday, and aside from the asking some probing questions about whether Morris was going to be exchanged for a defensive forward, and he was clearly probing at what Dimmer's getting at with his tactics, he said And he's never he's been critical of Richmond in the past. He said that Richmond are on the are potentially on the verge of something special. This is a different Richmond. Nick, I'd like to believe that.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.